Welcome to Federal Insights for June, Operational Resiliency Month, sponsored by Veritas.
Natural disasters, floods, fires, earthquakes, pandemic, all test the basic resiliency of the areas affected. Several federal agencies have disaster response as part of their basic missions. To keep things coordinated, the Government Accountability Office published what it calls a Disaster Resilience Framework, a guide to the principles that result in resilience. For details, I spoke with the GAO's Director of Information Technology and Cybersecurity Issues, Vijay D'Souza. Let's review what should be part of a COOP in the first place, so that the next time this happens, people can pull something off the shelf that is useful to them right from the beginning.
So, yes, federal agencies are required to do certain things to plan for unexpected occurrences, such as a pandemic or a natural disaster or other issues which might make it hard for them to do their operations. So there are several policies and frameworks in place where agencies are directed to develop plans to deal with these sorts of things. They have to consider their various business processes, look at what could impact those processes, and figure out the best way to mitigate those things so they can keep doing what they need to do.
And I think a COOP plan nowadays has a big information technology component.
Yes.
What are some of those?
Definitely. So any kind of continuity of operation plan has a variety of different functions, including all of the business areas, HR, records management, payroll, but information technology underlies all of those. So there's a number of specific guidance documents and things that agencies need to do as far as IT preparedness for some sort of disaster or interruption to their normal operations.
And what are some of those basics?
Well, they basically need to start out by identifying the risk to their systems. So, you know, risk can be things like, again, I mentioned a natural disaster, or it can be something like a pandemic. What you have to do is think about how each of those risks would affect each of the particular systems you have. Then what you need to do is you need to develop a mitigation strategy and figure out, you know, what would you do? So some of the options might be you might have an alternate computing facility. You know, a lot of agencies are moving towards cloud computing, and one of the advantages of cloud computing is most, you know, all cloud vendors are going to have a variety of backup operations and spread out computing across multiple facilities. But you also have to consider issues related to staffing. So, for example, if your staff were ill or unable to get to work, how would you run things? One of the things a lot of agencies are running into now is a lot of agencies are telework friendly. There's certain IT functions that can only be done in the building. For example, maintenance, replacing equipment that fails, repairing things, applying certain patches. So that's a bit of a challenge.
And I imagine one of the elements that would let you carry out a plan like this is really good visibility into the IT that you have so that nothing is overlooked or its importance isn't discovered until it's too late.
Right. So one of the requirements, one of the federal IT security requirements is that you have some sort of a disaster recovery or continuity of operations plan for each of your IT systems. So as part of the standard planning for IT security, you have to take a look at these issues. And then what you have to do is you have to integrate that with kind of the underlying business issues as well.
All right. And what about VPN capacity? That seems to be, have been anyway, the issue that a lot of agencies faced early on in the pandemic. Most of them have fixed it by now, but the idea of people not being able to get to work in a mass way for an extended period, that seems, yeah. I wonder if that was in this level of teleworking for this long was envisioned in anybody's plan.
Well, you know, I think the whole thing with these sorts of issues is it's always the things you don't quite expect. Planning for a pandemic has definitely been a standard part of various disaster and resiliency plans. But, you know, the extent in nature is always something you don't know for a fact until it happens. Now, one of the requirements of these plans is that they be tested periodically, but it's difficult to do a test at 100% capacity. I do know that several agencies did do sort of a stress test of their systems right before they went to full telework, which did help them identify some problems. But it's definitely a problem. You know, the trade-off there is you don't want to necessarily be paying for a capacity that you're not using except, you know, once in a long while. So it's always a trade-off as far as how much you want to pay for to keep that capacity in reserve. The other problem with those sorts of things is, you know, when you want a certain piece of equipment in a disaster particular situation, chances are everyone needs that piece of equipment. I mean, I think a perfect example is webcams, right? I was fortunate enough to buy a webcam right before this happened, just coincidentally. And then I discovered, and my agency discovered, that they're few and far between now, and they're very hard to get.
Yes. In fact, our own company that has two radio stations here, they've had dozens of them on back order. First, they were going to be August, and now the vendor is saying maybe never. They're running into international trade issues because of where they're manufactured.
Right. And, I think that's one of the things that we often don't think about in this sort of planning is when you need a particular thing, chances are everyone else is going to need that particular thing. One example that kind of came up that I thought was interesting in my research was if an agency has an alternate computing facility that's at another agency, which is pretty common because you want to share resources. Well, if both of those agencies are simultaneously disabled and need to use their alternate facilities, then you're caught in a kind of a catch-22 situation.
Sure. So, but then, like you say, one of the issues in planning for this is nobody can afford to have capacity in place continuously for the worst possible scenario. That is to say, you can't budget for peak when peaks are rare.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, in an ideal world, what you're supposed to do is have contracts with vendors on call to provide this sort of thing in disaster. And that is what you do. But the reality is, in a lot of cases, the vendors may not always be able to do that, because if you and 100 other customers are asking for that at the same time, they may or may not be able to deliver. So part of what you'll have to do as an agency is identify kind of what are your primary essential functions, and then what are some things that could wait or be done later or done via alternate means.
Vijay D'Souza, Director of Information Technology and Cybersecurity Issues at the Government Accountability Office. The interview continues after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
In today's era of more digital business, agencies combat malicious intent, data complexity, and other unknowns that could compromise your agency's operational resiliency. Mitigating these risks is paramount. With Veritas, agencies gain a dedicated partner to help ensure your organization's operational resilience with the most versatile and extensible platform on the market. Because in this era of more, no one addresses more scope, scale, and IT diversity than Veritas. Visit veritas.com/resiliency for additional information.
Welcome back to our interview with Vijay D'Souza, Director of Information Technology and Cybersecurity Issues at the Government Accountability Office, discussing the GAO's Disaster Resiliency Framework. And in recent years, do you think that the rise in cloud computing should have helped this whole issue? Because the word people use with cloud, the modifier, is elastic. And the idea is you can quickly ramp up capacity for whatever it is you need the capacity for, say your SBA, which is an agency that stressed by a need for increased capacity. And isn't that what the cloud is ultimately designed for?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's definitely a big help. And, I think it makes this area easier, but I think it's also important to recognize it's not a panacea. Again, the cloud vendor may be overwhelmed as far as trying to spool up excess capacity for every single customer it has. You have to plan for the possibility of network disruption. For example, we haven't seen that so much in this issue, but in other disasters, you know, simply having internet or telecom connectivity could be a problem. So if in some cases, in theory, that could actually make your situation worse. If your data center isn't in your building, but it's thousands of miles away, and there's a telecom disruption, that's going to make it harder for you to do things. So it's on balance, it's a positive, but you have to make sure it's not going to solve all your problems.
And sometimes the internet or the telecom fluctuations have a spatial characteristic, a time of day characteristic. So perhaps would good COOP plan include operating at different times of the day than might be considered normal 9 to 5?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely defer certain functions to times when there's less traffic on your own network. I mean, we see that at various agencies. Sometimes they'll do, even at GAO, we have very resource intensive computing needs. Sometimes we'll defer them to a time when there's less traffic on our network. So that's true. The other thing to think about is ways to kind of segment jobs or tasks in a way that if there is a disruption, it doesn't derail the whole task, requiring you to start over.
Got it. And what about your data? and protection of the data and knowledge of all the data you might need to operate in a pandemic or in some kind of a situation that requires the COOP to be invoked. How do you treat data in a COOP?
Well, so there's two different kinds of data or information I guess I'll talk about. The first is actually the information you need to activate your plan. You know, one thing is your plan can't be so, to some level, the early steps of any kind of COOP plan need to be in the key officials' heads, because you can't count on being able to get to a very complex document in a critical situation to get things, kick the plan off. Now, separately, if you're talking about agency data or sensitive data, one of the things that's, you know, interesting in this increasing telework environment is you have to really make sure the data is encrypted going all the way from your end user device or your keyboard, your computer, your phone to the network, because you have to assume anytime data is crossing the public internet that people are trying to get to it, read it, intercept it, and so on. So there's different aspects to that. And then the other thing to consider is if you have people using their own devices, for example, their own PCs, or even a government furnished PC that's outside of a building, you know, how is data, any data on that device secured when it's at rest, when it's off? So, you know, God forbid somebody steals the machine or it's destroyed or broken, what happens to the data there? A lot of agencies are moving towards a situation where they actually don't keep any data on the end user device. The data is stored within the agency and you're just kind of accessing it through some sort of virtual desktop. That's definitely one way to mitigate these issues. The other one is to encrypt any data that's stored on the device so that if someone tries to get in and it has strong enough encryption that they're unable to break into it.
And what about the cybersecurity situation? I think you alluded to that already, but cyber risks become different and morph during situations like this often too, don't they?
Yeah, well, the NIST guidance on telework pretty much tells you to assume that anytime you're using a device outside the building or outside an agency's network to try to get into the network, you have to plan for the possibility that that device is compromised with malware or someone's trying to intercept traffic in the middle. You have to kind of operate from the default assumption that your network and your devices are under attack or at risk. So with everyone, you know, outside the network perimeter, outside the agency's firewalls, those issues are very significant. The other thing related to that that's been, you know, very sad to see, but interesting to see is these hackers are very smart. They play on people's fears. We've seen a lot of phishing attacks and emails related to things like fake emails about stimulus checks or COVID research or things like that. And, you know, if you're kind of, as a lot of people are feeling a little anxious about things, sometimes you're more likely to click on something that you might not click on otherwise. And doing something as simple as that can cause a, you know, major disruption to your agency's network.
Should all agencies by now have implemented the so-called DMARC standard or architecture for their email such that it's much harder for phishing attacks to occur?
They should have, but you know, it's a complex task, as of the last time I checked, which was a little while ago, I don't think all agencies have done that. There's some quirks and issues, particularly related to, you know, some agencies now have been outsourcing their email to outside vendors, which helps them from a maintenance standpoint, but then trying to implement the appropriate controls so that someone can't spoof your email becomes a little bit more complicated.
Vijay D'Souza, Director of Information Technology and Cybersecurity Issues at the Government Accountability Office. The third and final segment of the interview right after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
In today's era of more digital business, agencies combat malicious intent, data complexity, and other unknowns that could compromise your agency's operational resiliency. Mitigating these risks is paramount. With Veritas, agencies gain a dedicated partner to help ensure your organization's operational resilience with the most versatile and extensible platform on the market. Because in this era of more, no one addresses more scope, scale, and IT diversity than Veritas. Visit veritas.com/resiliency for additional information.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Vijay D'Souza, Director of Information Technology and Cybersecurity Issues at the Government Accountability Office, discussing the GAO's Disaster Resiliency Framework. And who owns the responsibility for all of this? I mean, we've been talking about it as if it's purely an IT issue, but ultimately it is a business continuity and business resiliency topic. So What about the mission people, the program managers?
Yeah, correct. The federal guidance on this issue indicates that you have to have a senior agency official, a senior manager identified to be in charge of these activities. And when you're planning for them, you know, as I think I mentioned, you start out with a risk assessment, identifying all of the potential threats and things that could happen to disrupt your operations. But then the next step is a business process analysis. So looking at all of your business processes and then kind of doing a crosswalk of the business processes with the different threats to figure out what the impact would be, or the resulting business impact analysis. Once you do that crosswalk, you look at where do IT systems pop up in that impact analysis? Where are the key points of failure and the key disruptions? So, you know, it's definitely a shared responsibility. The other thing that business owners have to do is they have to make the trade-offs. You know, an IT person can tell you how much it's going to cost and what resources it would take to, for example, keep a system. We talk about a mirrored system, where a system is constantly running in two locations so that if one part goes down, the other part can take over seamlessly. Well, that's going to cost you more than just running a system in one place. So the business owner has to make the trade-off. So what they have to do is they have to look at the process and figure out what kind of downtime could they accept. So, for example, if you have something like a payroll system, payroll is typically done every 2 weeks. So you could handle, a few days downtime probably and be okay. You probably couldn't handle 2 weeks of downtime without a major disruption. And each particular business process is going to have a different allowable downtime that the business owner is willing to accept. So that's your starting point for making these sorts of trade-offs and budget decisions.
Do you think now that we've seen the phenomenon of almost everybody teleworking, that maybe agency managers, agency leaders will be more open to pressure testing their COOP, their continuity of operations plannings, from time to time by saying, perhaps, everybody stay home for the next 2 days and let's see what happens?
Well, yeah, I think anytime there's some sort of a disaster or a interruption to operations, the lessons learned from what went wrong for that inform the exercises for the next cycle. All of these plans are supposed to be tested at least annually. And typically what organizations do is they test different scenarios each year. So I'm pretty sure that going forward, we'll see a scenario involving something like 100% telework. Probably every agency has identified things they didn't think about when going into the situation. So hopefully what they should be doing, and this is part of the planning process, is identifying lessons learned from what's happening now, so that, you know, in the unfortunate event that we have to repeat something like this, that they can do a better job.
And I want to return to the SBA because I think it's a remarkable story, and they've done, I think, better than they get credit for through all of this. But in some ways, they had a double disaster. One was everybody had to telework. Okay, they had a lot of company in that phenomenon. But then Congress passed a law which gave this $1 trillion responsibility to them, so that they had to process in a very short time much more than they would have processed in the next 20 years under ordinary circumstances. So the cause of the initial requirement for the COOP was then compounded by a regulatory or legal change, which you can't classify as disaster, but it sure does stress continuity of operations, even if everyone had stayed at work.
Yeah, you're being asked to do like a 10x or 100x level of work with, you know, say one hand tied behind your back, and that's not easy. So you're right. It is complicated, and it's not surprising that they ran into some issues and they had to kind of scramble and deal with them. To be honest, the difficulty with that is planning for something like that. It's easy for us to figure out now what we should have done differently, you know, a month ago or 2 months ago. But the issue will be the next disaster or issue that causes a disruption in agency operations is likely to be something that we haven't fully anticipated. So the best thing we can really do is try to, as you mentioned, try to make our networks as resilient as possible, try to be flexible about things. But again, you have to recognize that certain things aren't going to get done. So some of it is prioritizing what are the things you have to get done and what are the things you can let go. I do think, as you mentioned, the increasing ability of agencies to rely on cloud vendors and other outside IT organizations to spool up processing capacity helps. But, it's not going to be seamless. It's not going to be without problems.
And at some level, a good coup requires imagination. I mean, suppose I'm Treasury and I would need imagination to say, well, suppose Congress asked me overnight to issue checks of varying amounts to 100 million, 150 million deserving Americans. Do I have the data to be able to do that accurately, to not send it to people that have been deceased since the last data update that I have, and so on? How do you foster that level of imagination to be able to understand the outside of what you might need to do?
Well, that, you know, that is what you're supposed to do as part of your initial risk assessment or planning exercises. You're supposed to sit down and kind of brainstorm different issues. As a slightly different example, but since I was there in person, I'll use it. We attended, for another job I was doing, we attended a tabletop planning exercise on election security, which DHS sponsored. And what they did is they brought in people from across the country, virtually and in person, and talked through different scenarios. What if this happened? What if that happened? How would we respond to it? And I think part of what's good is when you bring people with different skill sets together, they kind of think of different things that you wouldn't think of. So, you know, again, it's not just the IT people. You have frontline worker people, you have senior managers, you have HR folks, you have people from every aspect of the organization saying, well, you know, if you shut down this system, this is going to happen. And, you know, if you want to issue, like in your example, you want to issue all these checks, you know, we have to have this capacity on hand. I don't have any direct knowledge of that particular situation you're talking about, but you're right. A lot of it is going to be captured in the initial risk assessment and planning you do.
And I guess a final question is indicated by something you just said, and that is frontline people. Sometimes the people just doing the processing, doing the questionnaires, whatever it is, on the very, very front lines dealing with the public individually, probably it's a good idea to ask them, what can go wrong from your standpoint? What information do you frequently not have when you're trying to answer a question or fulfill a request or whatever, complete an application? Seems like they should really be part of it as much as the higher ups in the agency.
Well, definitely, because they're the ones who are going to see all the things that go wrong out in the field or at ground level that, you know, senior managers may not always be aware of. So it's important to listen to them, get their input. And also they're going to identify things that probably go wrong even in regular situations that senior management may not be aware of. So if there's connectivity issues normally, then those things are going to get worse in a pandemic.
So basically these are not IT issues, even though they are IT remedies, but they're really business issues supported by IT is the best way to put it, I guess.
Correct. Because when you do this planning, you know, you're going to identify IT issues, but you're also going to identify underlying business issues. Let me give you an example from our agency that we're dealing with now. We're trying to hire people without having them come into the building. You know, how do we do that? That's not something we plan for. So there's an HR issue there. We have to make sure we do all the appropriate screening, get them their forms, verify documents. And then we also have to give them their IT equipment. How do we do that? I think other agencies are all facing the same issue.
Vijay D'Souza, Director of Information Technology and Cybersecurity Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Share this interview or hear it again at federalnewsnetwork.com. Click on Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for June, Operational Resiliency Month, sponsored by Veritas on Federal News Network.
Warm weather has finally arrived and motorcyclists are everywhere. If you ride, consider joining me, Federal News Network host Tom Temin, on our first ever motorcycle ride for charity, now scheduled for Friday morning, June 26th. 100% of the cost of the ride will benefit the Federal Employee Education and Assistance Fund and Friends of Patients at the NIH. Enjoy camaraderie, lunch, and a scenic route through Fairfax and Montgomery counties into D.C. For details, visit federalnewsnetwork.com and click Charity Motorcycle Ride.